you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Happy Saturday! 50 years ago today, a lava flow broke through the base of the Eldfell volcano in the Westman Islands in Iceland. The volcano had been erupting for weeks, but this was a new development that threatened a harbor that was critical to the island's survival. So people started trying to slow the flow with water.
I love this whole story and their episode on this volcano and this effort to save the town and the harbor from destruction originally came out on June 1st, 2016. It is today's Saturday Classic, so enjoy.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
I'm Holly Fry.
I went to Iceland.
I know.
It was for fun and not for work, which is why you did not hear any Iceland episodes before I went to there. I also did not take any notes for the podcast while I was there, but what I did do is get immersed in a lot of Icelandic history because it's just about impossible to go to Iceland and not do that. Like, you would literally have to go into a hotel and not leave or talk to anyone. There are lots of museums in Iceland and lots of historical sites that are very easy to get to and visibly marked from the road. So you kind of would have to work. It's the same little symbol as a command key on a Mac is this sort of point of interest sign in Iceland and a lot of other sort of northern European countries. So it's very easy to find things to learn about. And then sometimes you just take a walk to give your camera battery a little bit more time to recharge, and then you stumble across a consecrated pool that's tied to both Iceland's saga age and historical events during the Reformation. It's just everywhere.
That one pool is just everywhere lurking.
That one pool was behind a guest house that we stayed at, and we literally had no idea there was anything interesting back there, and then there it was. One of the events that I learned about that fascinated me the most, though, was from Iceland's much more recent history than that particular serendipitous find. And it's really on the cusp of how recent we normally get on the podcast. It is a massive and prolonged volcanic eruption on the island of Heimaey. Heads up that every piece of non-Icelandic video footage I have seen about this eruption pronounces it in some other way, like Heimaey or Heimaey or Heimaey, but Heimaey is closest to how I've heard people actually pronouncing it while I was in Iceland. Heimaey is a small island off of Iceland's southern coast, and it's part of the Vestmannaeyjar Archipelago, which is also known in English as the Westman Islands. And this eruption is what we are going to talk about today.
Iceland is located on the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, basically a long, mostly underwater volcanic mountain range that runs all the way from the Arctic down toward the southern tip of Africa. And this ridge exists because of the divergence of tectonic plates. As the plates slowly move apart, magma rises up and lava fills that gap that's created, gradually and sometimes suddenly forming mountains. And most of this happens underwater, but in some places, the resulting mountains are tall enough to break through the surface of the ocean. And this is the case with Iceland, which lies along the North American and Eurasian plates.
Iceland itself is a relatively young island, and in the grand scheme of things, it really hasn't been inhabited for very long. The first permanent settlement there was established in the 9th century. The first written record of a volcanic eruption on Iceland is from the 10th century, and volcanoes have been an ongoing part of life in Iceland for all of the centuries since then. Iceland is home to well over 100 volcanoes, and there are about 30 active volcanic systems. 13 volcanoes have erupted since Iceland was settled, with the lengths of the eruptions ranging from hours to months. And a lot of people like to make the average one eruption every 5 years.
This brings us to the Westman Islands. This is a group of 15-ish islands, it depends on how you classify them, where that number exactly lands, along with lots of smaller islets, including some of the youngest islands on Earth. One of these is the island of Surtsey, which was formed through volcanic activity in 1963, so very young. Surtsey has been protected since it was originally formed, allowing scientists to study the way species make their way to a new environment.
Heimaey is the largest island in the Westman Islands, and it's home to those islands' only town, which is also called Vestmannaeyjar. There are a couple of summer homes on other islands in this archipelago, but Heimaey is the only one that's inhabited year-round by an actual established community. Although it's the biggest island in the Westman Islands, Heimaey is still quite small. It's about 5 square miles or 13 square kilometers, and there's a 2014 CNN article that describes Heimaey as, quote, a barren chunk of volcanic rock. That is not an apt description. It is volcanic. It is rocky, but it is plenty green, and there are birds everywhere. And in the summer months, it's actually home to one of the biggest puffin populations in all of Iceland, so it is also adorable.
I was just going to say we should have a moment to pause so everyone can go, aw, while they imagine the puffins.
I got to hold a puffin while I was there.
Oh, my jealousy.
It was not a wild puffin. It was a rescued puffin. I did not go pick up a puffin on a cliff. That would be bad.
Yeah. Heimaey's coast is largely formed of tall cliffs, with basalt stacks extending out into the ocean. In the middle, it's flatter, and before 1973, its most prominent feature in its relatively flat interior was the volcanic cone known as Helgafell.
I'm going to take a moment and mention that in Icelandic, an L at the end of the word makes a sound that's classified as a voiceless lateral fricative. This is not a sound that exists in English, and then two L's in a row have an even slightly different non-English phoneme. Trying to replicate this sound throughout the podcast would be extremely distracting because it's like you put your tongue at the top of your mouth and then kind of exhale a little bit. It sounds very sibilant and kind of tisky, and it would be really distracting to hear two people that don't speak Icelandic try to do that for all of these volcano names. So we're just going to say it the way it is spelled, which is more like Helgafell. So Helgafell and the rest of the island of Heimaey is, or was, believed to be extinct, or at least dormant, by both the residents of the island and scientists. There had been plenty of offshore eruptions of other volcanoes, including that one that created the island of Surtsey a decade before this story happened. There had also been plenty of eruptions on the mainland of Iceland, but Helgafell had undergone no known eruptions since the settlement of Iceland. Everybody thought where they were living was a pretty safe spot to be.
On January 21st, 1973, a series of small seismic tremors rattled through southern Iceland, with about 200 seismic events over about 14 hours. Another, shallower series of earthquakes started on the 22nd at around 10 p.m., and some of them could be felt on the island of Heimaey, but all were small, with the largest having a magnitude of about 3.
If this had happened today, these earthquakes would have basically been a 30-hour heads-up to the residents of Heimaey that something big was about to happen and they should probably evacuate. But at the time, the field of seismology and Iceland's seismic network were a lot less advanced than they are today. Seismologists didn't have a way of pinpointing the epicenter of these little earthquakes. And those that did think the seismic activity was a warning of something that was going to be in the form of an eruption were more focused on Katla, which is a volcano on the mainland, which is known to be active and has, in fact, erupted more than 20 times since Iceland was settled.
But what this seismic activity was really foreshadowing was a massive eruption on Heimaey itself, which we are going to talk about, but first we are going to pause for a word from one of our fantastic sponsors.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a Gagillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about Comfort Hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper, waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
When shaking and noise started on the island of Heimaey at about 2 o'clock in the morning on January 23rd of 1973, the residents who noticed it and had also felt the earlier earthquakes thought this was just another one. They were kind of like, here we go again. What was really happening, though, was that a fissure was opening up along the eastern side of Heimaey, just over 1,000 yards from the center of town and about 200 yards from the edge of town. That's roughly 900 meters and 180 meters for those who are in the world of metric measurements.
The fissure quickly spread. It ran roughly southwest to northeast, stretching all the way from Heimaey's southern to its northern coasts and beyond, with submarine volcanic activity going on at either end.
At the beginning of the eruption, a curtain made up of about 40 fountains of molten lava launched out of this fissure, which was incredibly dramatic, but not, at least for the first few hours, all that damaging. A natural slope of land kind of directed the falling lava away from the town, and then favorable wind also at first kept most of the tephra, which is sort of a catch-all term for a volcanic material that is launched into the air, it kept most of the tephra from coming toward the town.
And this meant that even though the residents of Heimei had been taken completely by surprise by the sudden appearance of a huge fissure and a curtain of lava right next to their town, on an island believed to be volcanically inactive, they had time to evacuate before things became really dangerous. Volcanoes were a known hazard, and Heimei and the mainland both had evacuation plans in place.
The evacuation itself was also aided by another stroke of incredibly good fortune that there were people that even described as being providential. A storm had moved through the region on the 22nd, so Heimei's fishing fleet was all safely docked at the harbor, along with some boats that really worked from the mainland but had taken refuge in Heimei when the gale blew in.
In other words, the island had a ready-made evacuation fleet that was already there in the harbor, which was, at that point, not being threatened by the erupting volcano, thanks to the lay of the land and the prevailing winds.
The town's fire department and police used horns and sirens to wake residents and inform them of the danger. Residents took what they could carry. They crowded into fishing boats to be taken to the mainland port of Thorlaksudden, and then on to Reykjavik, which is Iceland's capital, by bus.
This was a trip that, while not necessarily comfortable, was made safely by all who were evacuated. Although the storm had passed, the water was still choppy, so seasickness was a problem. It also took a lot longer than it takes to get to the mainland by boat today. Now there's a ferry terminal at Landeyjahattan that's much closer to the island. People who were ill or elderly were mostly airlifted from Heimei's airport to the Reykjavik and Keflavik airports on the mainland, which are about 45 minutes apart by car. The evacuation flights used planes and helicopters from the U.S.-manned Iceland Defense Force and Iceland Air.
The evacuation was completely successful, with about 5,300 people safely taken to the mainland where they all met up in Reykjavik. And this was a really calm and efficient affair. In 5 or 6 hours, anyone who could leave the island had left the island, and from the boats, people could see this curtain of fire along the edge of the town as well as under the water as they passed by.
This makes me think of the contrast of how sometimes these things happen and there's always that person that holds out and says they're not going to leave. But everyone left in a very orderly manner.
There were a very few people who stayed behind to basically fight the volcano, but it was a very calm evacuation. I think the fact that a lot of the adults on the island had been able to see the formation of Surtsey to the south of them from the island, and like that had not endangered them, probably helped people stay calm. I mean, people in Iceland seem pretty pragmatic about volcanoes in a lot of ways, from my experience in 10 days of being there.
Later, the government of Iceland sent workers to remove cultural and historical artifacts from the island. 400 head of livestock were also evacuated from the island.
Because this was deep in the Icelandic winter, Reykjavik had a lot of hotel rooms available. So after being received, fed, and temporarily sheltered at schools, Heimei's residents who didn't have family on the mainland were mostly housed in vacant hotel rooms. Most of the residents did have family that they could stay with, though, so the housing needs that needed to be provided by the government of Iceland turned out to be pretty minimal. At the same time, though, you can just sort of imagine how a close-knit community of only a little more than 5,000 people all living together on a little island it was. Splitting people up, even if they were staying with family, was still pretty traumatic for the community itself.
The government of Iceland created and funded an emergency relief fund for people who had been displaced by the volcano. They requested prefabricated housing from Sweden, Canada, and Norway in order to build temporary housing on the coast so the people from Heimei who had made their living in fishing could continue to work, and hopefully lower the impact on Iceland's economy by the disruption in Heimei's fishing industry.
For the next few months, the only people on Heimei would be the very few people who couldn't leave because of something related to their jobs, like, say, the people who kept really critical things running, and the people who were trying to save the town, as well as scientists, some of whom were from Iceland and some were from elsewhere, who came in to study the eruption in progress.
Not long after this very well-organized evacuation was complete, lava stopped erupting from most of the fissure, concentrating itself primarily in one roughly central portion of it. cinders and debris from this eruption started to form a cone, which would eventually be named Eldfell, or Fire Mountain. Within a couple of days, Eldfell grew to 110 yards, or 100 meters tall.
However, the narrowing of the eruption from a curtain to more like a cone did not mean it was any less destructive. It was actually the opposite that was true. The favorable wind that had kept the volcanic debris mostly away from the town during the evacuation shifted, which sent tephra, burning cinders, and lava bombs toward homes and other buildings. Some of these buildings immediately caught fire. Others were buried and crushed in falling tephra. Some were just crushed under the weight of volcanic material, even if they were spared from catching fire.
Emergency crews cleared debris off of roofs to try to keep them from collapsing and propped them up from the inside. They put corrugated iron over windows on the volcanic side of the buildings to try to keep volcanic bombs from shattering them and setting houses on fire from the inside. And they erected barriers along one side of the lava field in the hope of slowing its progression.
Moving into February of 1973, the cone continued to grow. It roughly doubled in height by the middle of the month. A very steep rim started to form on one side of Eldfell thanks to a combination of wind and falling tephra. A lake of lava started to form in the middle of the cone also, and soon pressure from the lava lake combined with the wind and caused this increasingly steep rim to collapse. The collapsing wall of the mountain rolled across the eastern side of the town and buried a number of houses.
At about this time, the volcano also started to emit increasing concentrations of carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide. Air around the volcano became progressively more dangerous to breathe. Birds and other animals began to die as the buildup of gases in the air became poisonous. According to the museum now located on the site of the eruption, poisonous gases were the cause of the sole human fatality directly tied to this eruption.
At about the same time as Eldfell's rim collapsed and buried more of the town, the lava flow from the volcano shifted directions as well. A submarine lava flow broke a cable and a pipeline, which were responsible for carrying electricity and drinking water from the mainland to the island. On top of that, lava started to threaten the island's port. Hemai had a natural harbor that was sheltered on one side by a cliff, and this harbor was critically important to both the island's and Iceland's economy. If the volcano filled in or blocked the harbor, it would become vastly harder to get people and supplies on and off the island for the remediation and cleanup efforts as well.
This meant that Hemai needed a way to fight back against this volcano, and we are going to talk about that, but first we will pause for another sponsor break.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about comfort hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper, waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
As we alluded to before the break, Heimei was home to a protected harbor that was critically important to the little island's survival. Was one of two ways to get on and off the island, the other being Heimei's airport. On top of that, fishing was one of Heimei's most important industries, and Heimei's fishing industry was also extremely important to Iceland's fishing industry as a whole. 20% of Iceland's fish processing plants were located on the island. So without a working port, the island of Heimei would be far less habitable and far less economically sustainable once the eruption was over. And really, if Heimei's fishing industry was destroyed, that was going to be a huge problem for Iceland's economy as well.
Real threats to the port began on February 11th, when a huge flow of lava broke through Eldfell's base. It was about 20 meters wide and 20 meters tall, and it threatened to fill in the harbor. At this point, cargo planes had to be requested to transport heavy earth-moving equipment onto the island because this flow of lava meant the harbor could no longer accommodate boats large enough to carry them.
It was basically making the harbor shallower, so only things that had a shallower draft could really get in and out of there. In an effort to cool the lava and slow it down, crews started spraying it with water, first from the town's fire trucks using the municipal water supply. Then a pumping ship was requested from the United States, which would continue to draw water from the municipal supply. Basically, the municipal water supply was the big volcano-fighting power source until the lava we mentioned earlier broke that pipeline that had been carrying the water from the mainland.
So the decision was made at that point to try seawater. The government of Iceland requested more pumping equipment from the United States. And in the end, more than 19 miles, that's 30 kilometers, of pipe and 43 pumps operated by 75 workers at the peak of the operation hurled water at the advancing lava in the hope of cooling it down. Some of this work and other work associated with trying to salvage as much of the town as possible was incredibly dangerous due to the proximity to the volcano, as well as the poisonous gases in the air and the decreased visibility due to steam from cooling operations and blowing ash and cinders.
Over the next few months, an estimated 5.5 million tons of seawater were used to try to cool the lava down and divert it away from the harbor and later from the town as well. Basically, the lava heated up the water, making lots and lots of steam and cooling off in the process. As it cooled, the lava hardened, eventually making a wall that molten lava could creep over but not really break through. So as this creeping lava would sort of top the solid layer, they would spray that part to make this increasingly tall wall of hardened lava.
There are some people who will argue that we can never really know if this worked, because who knows how the lava would have behaved without all of this human intervention. However, the lava flow was stopped 110 yards or 100 meters short of blocking the harbor, and its progress was slowed through the town as well. However, several of Iceland's fish processing plants were destroyed before the water project could really begin.
Yeah, I feel like some of the people who were like, well, the lava could have completely shifted course, we'll never know. I feel like they're just kind of naysayers wanting to say nay about it. The eruption was declared over on July 3rd, 1973. It had been slowing down for a while, but that was really 5 months. It was more than 5 months after it had started. Water cooling operations stopped on the 10th of July, and schools were reopened that fall.
It's estimated that 200 million tons of ash and lava fell in and around Heimei during the eruption. Eldfell grew to a height of 656 feet, that's 200 meters. About a third of the town was destroyed. Not all of the 5,300 people who had evacuated returned. The population today is only 4,500, so it is still below its 1973 pre-volcano level.
Yeah, there are still houses that are buried. And a lot of the people who didn't return were people whose houses were under so much volcanic debris that they were like, it's never going to get dug out. And even if it is dug out, everything that is in there is crushed. However, all of that lava and tephra did wound up having some favorable impacts on the island. I mean, there was definitely a huge loss of property. Fortunately, not a loss of human life other than the one person who was killed because of the poisonous gases. But the lava flow that almost blocked the harbor was made into a breakwater, and it now provides more shelter for the harbor from a direction that it had previously been exposed to. This huge increase in volcanic material on the island also provided a much-needed source of landfill. Previously, if they had needed to fill land in any way, they would have to sort of have earth shipped in on a boat, which is not very practical. And the cooling lava under the surface of the island is now one of the island's primary sources of heat and hot water.
In 2005, the town council of Vestmannaeyjar agreed to excavate some of the houses that were still buried. Lots of comparisons were made to Pompeii. Under that ash, some of the homes were still intact, and even the ones that were crushed still contained most of their owners' possessions. A museum, Eldheimar, opened in 2014, and its centerpiece is one of the homes that was crushed, volcanic debris and all.
That museum is really cool.
We should go. You've already been. I'll just go.
Yeah, if you if you are in Iceland, you can get to Heimei from a brief airplane, a little airplane still make me kind of nervous. So, I personally like the ferry. The ferry is about half an hour. And this particular, we didn't really plan an itinerary beyond our lodging. We didn't plot out day by day what we wanted to do. And so we were staying somewhere not far away, and I realized that this volcano museum was on the island and said, hey, do you want to take the ferry and check this out? And we did. It was a very good trip.
Yay!
So that's how basically people fought a volcano and mostly won.
Yeah.
Using what feels to me like a child's logic of, can't we just spray this with water and cool it off? Thanks so much for joining us on this Saturday. Since this episode is out of the archive, if you heard an email address or a Facebook URL or something similar over the course of the show, that could be obsolete now. Our current email address is historypodcast@iheartradio.com. Our old How Stuff Works email address no longer works. You can find us all over social media at Missed in History. And you can subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, and wherever else you listen to podcasts. Stuff You Missed in History Class is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway. The Great American Race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR, the Motor Racing Network. Work.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.